The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. It is now 1:05. We will finish at 2:05. I will now recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Speaker. Mr. Speaker, today we heard from family members of the veterans in the Northumberland Veterans Unit in Pictou about the frozen food that's been served to our elderly veterans there. Mr. Speaker, and government knows about this issue. It is where the NDP's misguided attempts to back the balance has hit the homes and tables, Mr. Speaker, of our veterans. In cutting $5 million over 2 years from the health authority in Pictou County, Mr. Speaker, our veterans are eating standardized food. So my question to the Premier, how much money is it saved by the Northumberland Veterans Unit by replacing home-cooked food with frozen food?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we want only the very best for our seniors, for our veterans in particular. My understanding is that there has been a review of the situation done by the District Health Authority, that there have been a series of recommendations made with respect to this. You will appreciate that District Health Authorities and the RAC do not inform us when they make these changes. However, when it came to our attention through the Minister of Health, we made sure that they were aware of it and that we were dissatisfied with what was being received by our veterans and by our seniors. I understand that action has been taken and those recommendations are going to be implemented.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, while it's nice to know that the government is dissatisfied, veterans are still eating frozen food, Mr. Speaker, and I'm going to pick up them. Speaker, this government cut $5 million out of the budget of the Pictou District Health Authority, Mr. Speaker, and in order to meet their balance, Mr. Speaker, they cut $70,000, Mr. Speaker, to the food budget for our veterans. But, Mr. Speaker, last year, Veterans Affairs increased funding to the Health Authority while the Health Authority was cutting the food budget, Mr. Speaker, of our veterans. So my question, does the government believe our veterans, who the average age, which is 90, should be subsidizing government's demand to get back to balance?
Honourable the Premier.
As I said, Mr. Speaker, the Leader of the Opposition will appreciate that often the District Health Authorities make these decisions. They do not report them either to the Department of Health or more specifically to the government through any vehicle. They simply make these decisions. Once they were brought to our attention, we reviewed them. There was an appropriate review and recommendations which are being implemented. In my view, it is important that we make sure that everyone in our care gets the appropriate level of nutrition, that is done in an appropriate manner. That's what I would expect. It's what I expect from the government. It is what I expect for our veterans.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, well, this government, Mr. Speaker, is getting back to balance on the veterans in this province, Mr. Speaker. Veterans Affairs, Mr. Speaker, has increased their budget to that District Health Authority. It's not good enough for this government, Mr. Speaker, to send down protocols. This government needs to stand up and demand that the money that this District Health Authority is receiving from Veterans Affairs is being used to feed those veterans, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, our veterans are being asked to pay by feeding them the equivalent
equivalent of airplane food, Mr. Speaker, on a daily basis. So my question to the Premier, will the Premier do the right thing by our veterans and demand that District Health Authority use all the money that it receives from Veterans Affairs Canada to feed our veterans?
Yeah. Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure... Well, I'm not sure. I was going to say I'm sure that he believes what he's saying, but I don't really believe that. I understand this is an important issue for, certainly, as a person who had a loved one in a seniors facility just a short time ago until my mother passed away. I'm very cognizant of the services that need to be provided to our loved ones who are in these facilities. If there's money allocated from the federal government for those services, then that's where they're spent. End of story. The simple fact of the matter is we look to provide the highest quality care for the people in our church. You can depend on one thing. Unlike the Liberals, Mr. Speaker, who robbed our seniors of every single cent they had until they were in the depths of poverty before they would supply anything, this government cares about the people in their charge, will make sure they receive the appropriate services, and where there are decisions that somehow impact them that are inappropriate, we will demand and see that they are fixed.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, for the past few months, the Premier has been insisting that his government has implemented all of the recommendations of the McKay Anti-Bullying Task Force. But that is clearly not the case, Mr. Speaker, because as recently as today, they continue to find new recommendations to implement. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians want to know that their government is doing all it can to protect our young children. So I'll ask the Premier, why didn't the government implement all of the McKay Task Force recommendations in the first place?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, with all respect to the Leader of the Conservative Party, I did not say what he alleges I said. In fact, what I said was that we accepted the recommendations. They were the basis for the action plan for the government. The government has set out a very clearly articulate action plan that has included the implementation through legislation of a certain number of those recommendations, implementation by preparation through the departments in order to facilitate other recommendations. And now, Mr. Speaker, what they will see is this is yet another part of the overall implementation of those recommendations, which I think is, and I understand, was well received by the Leader of the Conservative Party, and I think will be well received by the public.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I guess like every other commitment of the government, whether it's that they won't raise our taxes or they won't close our ERs, Nova Scotians once again are being asked to listen very carefully to the fine print when the Premier says something, in this case, about the McKay Task Force. Mr. Speaker, that task force was a complete and comprehensive review, including receiving advice from all of the experts and all of those involved in preventing bullying and cyberbullying in Nova Scotia. It is a whole plan. Nova Scotians want to know that their government is doing all that it can to stop the scourge of cyberbullying in its tracks. So I will ask the Premier, was Dr. Wayne McKay, the chair of that task force, consulted about the announcement that was made this morning?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I suppose when the Leader of the Conservative Party says you have to listen very carefully to the fine print, that is a bit of a mixed metaphor. Although I get what he's trying to say, and it is simply the case that, you know, there are many people out there, and I have the benefit, of course, of getting the opinion of many people regularly, often turning up often turning up in the newspaper. And there are those people out there who say that we ought to slow down, that we are overreacting to one case, and that we should wait for cooler heads to prevail. And then there are those who say that we should speed up and that we should, you know, immediately act on, you know, all of these things. But instead, Mr. Speaker, what we have done is we have taken the recommendations of Mr. McKay. We have looked at them. We have investigated them thoroughly. It is one thing to say that you're going to implement something. It's quite another to be able to prepare and engage to make sure that you are able to accomplish what you say you are going to do. Mr. Speaker, I can assure the leader of the Conservative Party that the minister spoke with Mr. McKay in relation to today's announcement. I believe, in fact, he was invited to be with us today. Mr. Speaker, my point is simply this. Nova Scotia is now leading the country with respect to this issue. We're proud of the progress that has been made. We know that more must be done, and we are doing it.
The leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Well, Mr. Speaker, let's just be clear. No one can accuse this government of moving too fast on this issue. That is the problem, Mr. Speaker. That is the problem. In opposition, we have put forward bills and ideas on cyber for over a year. Mr. Speaker, the McKay Task Force is 18 months old, and some of its recommendations remain apparently under consideration, and no more than that. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia made national and international news for very sad and tragic reasons a few weeks ago. Now we have an opportunity, or the government has an opportunity, to actually truly put Nova Scotia in a position to make national news for all the right reasons, which is to implement all of the recommendations of the McKay Task Force, do all it can to protect our young people from bullying and cyberbullying. So I'll ask the Premier, will he commit now to ensuring that all of the recommendations of the McKay Task Force are not just considered, but are actually done for the good of the young people that need them?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as I pointed already, the recommendation of the task force is, in fact, the foundation of the action plan that is going forward. Far from being just considered, I think the evidence that is before you and before the public is that there has been a program that has been implemented that recognizes the seriousness of the events that have taken place and the seriousness of the emergence of these new forms of bullying. And we have implemented those actions that we believe can best be used to combat these difficulties. As I've said, will there be additional action from the government? Yes, there will, because, in fact, that is the way you go about implementing an action plan, which is through a series of actions over time that address the issue in order to make sure that you are effective.
The Honourable Member for King's West.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker. I was hoping today that when the Minister gave his ministerial statement that he would have, in fact, noted that in 2004, the member for Annapolis made a motion in committee, and I second that motion, to put $4 million into the EIBI program, which the Conservative government of the day did do. Well, Mr. Speaker, the presentation that day in Community Services Committee was done by Norm Donovan. And when Norm emailed me about the minister's statement on Monday night and families followed, I asked a simple question the second night. And the Minister of Health and Wellness, during budget estimates, on two separate occasions, on two separate days, stated his budget provided $4 million and $4.1 million, respectively, for EIBI funding. And I reviewed Hansard video this morning. Yesterday, the Premier stated funding grew under his government from $2 million to $4 million. $2 million to $4 million, I'll table that. And today, department officials indicate that funding for $8 million remains a commitment. Now, could the minister please indicate who we are to believe, the minister, the premier, or department officials?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, you know, the member has raised what is a very important question. It's a very important question to me. It's a very important question to the members of our government. I stood with the members of the Autism Society, with the parents, and with the kids for that announcement that day, and I witnessed the absolute joy on the faces of those people who understood for the first time, who through conservative and liberal governments were abandoned. For the first time, they saw their kids actually getting the services that they deserved. The commitment that we made, we lived up to. We have lived up to it in every facet, including the funding. Mr. Speaker, and I hope now that that is confirmed for the member, that when he stands up, he will apologize for the anxiety that he has caused many of those people.
The Honourable... The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Mr. Speaker, as the Premier said, it is a very serious issue, and families with children with autism wanted me to assure them that $8 million was available for EIBI, not what the Minister had talked about in estimates. The Minister stood in his place, not once, but twice, and said his department provides $4 million for preschool EIBI. And Mr. Speaker, $4 million and $8 million are two vastly different numbers. So how are we to believe numbers from the minister and this government if we receive different answers from the minister, one from the premier, and different ones from government officials?
Honourable the Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On this side, we all work together, especially, Mr. Speaker, when a party like the Liberal Party gives misinformation to Nova Scotians, causes concerns for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. We work together, we stand together, so that we can tell the truth to Nova Scotians about our commitment to autism, Mr. Speaker. It hasn't unwavered in the 4 years we've been in government, Mr. Speaker. We're going to continue to support the EIBI program and the men and women, the parents, the children who are working to support their children who have autism, Mr. Speaker. And I'm very proud of our accomplishment, and I look forward to the apology from the member opposite.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians remain outraged at the fact that convicted sexual predator Fenwick McIntosh is now a free man because our justice system took too long to get him to trial. Rather than show leadership, the Premier said yesterday that if the federal government called a public inquiry, he'd be happy to tag along. Today, Federal Minister of Justice Rob Nicholson confirmed that the Harper government will not call an inquiry into the McIntosh matter. So my question is, will the Premier finally do the right thing and call an independent public inquiry into the McIntosh case?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I have not seen anything out of the Justice Minister at this point. I don't know what position they're taking. I do know there are a number of different kinds of things that they do. I believe that the federal government should undertake an appropriate review of this. As I have said to the member opposite, there is already an internal review underway. We look to have a formal reply from the federal government. We think their engagement on this issue is an important one. I am every bit as much concerned. I am every bit as much disturbed by what I consider to be the failures of the system in relation to this matter. I want to see an appropriate review of it take place. I invite
the Minister of Justice federally to undertake this review, and I look forward to receiving their reply.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier may want to go outside and ask the media what he was said in Ottawa today, where clearly the Minister of Justice has refused to call an inquiry. Regardless of the federal issues that are at play, the Premier knows that there was a significant shortfall that happened within the Public Prosecution Service of Nova Scotia. There is no doubt of that. The victims are now being asked by the Premier, wait a little bit longer. Wait for a review being done internally by the same players who would have been involved throughout this to see what went wrong. Something that when the NDP would have sat on this side of the House would have clearly said was unacceptable for victims. But today, in government, apparently, wait a little bit longer. Why will the Premier not finally show leadership for victims of our justice system in this province and call a public inquiry into the McIntosh matter?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the member from Richmond knows, he was a practicing lawyer, he understands that the jurisdiction on this is... Is split between the province and the federal government. I want to be really clear. I'm not pointing the finger at the current Conservative government. Within a year of them coming to power, an extradition was undertaken and the person was returned for trial. That within a year of being elected. But there was a Liberal government there for a long time. And passports were reissued time after time instead of the appropriate action having been taken. I agree that there needs to be a review. I agree that the victims of this predator deserve answers. And I have asked the federal government to participate and to do the right thing in calling the inquiry since this jurisdiction falls to them. I think that should be done. I am not ruling out a further review other than the internal one as well. We want answers. We want an eyes wide open review of this, and we will not settle for anything less.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Well, if I can assist the Premier, I am still a practicing member of the bar, and I can say that I've paid my own bar fees to remain a practicing member of the bar. Mr. Speaker, these matters happened years ago. Years ago, Mr. Speaker, is when this happened. It wasn't under the NDP government. We realize that. The Home for Colored Children wasn't under an NDP government either. But those are victims today that are looking for answers and that are calling for justice and that are calling for change. And yet we have a Premier that's saying, blame Ottawa. Let's look at previous governments in Ottawa and let Ottawa go first and we will follow. My question again is, when will the Premier finally stand up for Nova Scotians and call an independent public inquiry into the McIntosh case?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the member... Is he still a member? Member for Richmond, right?
Yep.
Okay. The reality is, Mr. Speaker, is that there is a split jurisdiction here. We agree entirely. This is the odd thing about this. I mean, much of what the member says, I agree with. I think that people deserve to have answers. They deserve to ensure that there is a full vetting of the situation. But we also recognize the responsibility of the federal government. And it's all too easy for the members opposite to say, just ignore that, just ignore the fact that there are other responsibilities, just ignore the cost that will be accrued, just ignore all that. Well, no, Mr. Speaker, we're not going to do that. We're going to do the right thing. We're going to proceed in the right fashion. I believe that the federal government ought to participate. I think there are many other kinds of reviews other than formal inquiries that could be undertaken. I have not heard from the member, from the Minister of Justice. I've been referred to the comments that he's made in the press, but formally we have received no reply from them. I think we need to have their participation and engagement to, in fact, answer the very questions that the member has put forward.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, too many Nova Scotians are struggling to make ends meet today. And in fact, we learned, and I'll table this in a moment, that the incomes of Nova Scotians have actually declined by 0.6% since 2009. Well, the cost of everyday items goes up and up. Whether it's power rates or the HST, Nova Scotians are paying more with less to spend, Mr. Speaker. Perhaps that is why, in 2012, over 18,000 of our fellow Nova Scotians chose to move away from our province to another part of Canada, and I will table that for the benefit of the Premier. Mr. Speaker, a lot of talk about elections around here, but clearly Nova Scotians are already voting with their feet on the record of the NDP government when it comes to things like the cost of everyday items. So I'll ask the Premier, why did 18,000 Nova Scotians move away last year?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as usual, the member has his facts wrong, but I'm not going to bother responding to that. The question is purely rhetorical. You know, this morning there was a wide-ranging conversation with realtors in the province, and one of the things that they noted was that although the market had slowed considerably, there was still growth in the market here, and the reason for that was because of the growth in real wages for people in the province, Mr. Speaker. So, the simple fact of the matter is if the leader of the Conservative Party has his way, the shipbuilding contract down in the yard would not have happened. Those jobs would have went somewhere else. In fact, what they'd be building down there, Mr. Speaker, is condominiums rather than ships. If the leader of the Conservative Party had his way, the RIM would now be consolidated back in Waterloo, and the people in those neighbourhoods who rely on those for jobs would not be there. If the leader of the opposition, or rather the leader of the Conservative Party, had his way, the IBM Global Delivery Centre would not be here, Mr. Speaker, and those people, those 500 people who are going to be employed there, would be working somewhere else, Mr. Speaker. We are working hard to develop our economy, to grow the opportunities for young people. That is what we are committed to. I still haven't figured out what it is that the leader of the Conservative Party is committed to in terms of economic development.
Honourable the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, just one more time. The reason that that shipyard contract is there is because they earned it as the best shipbuilders in the world on a contract from the Government of Canada. And what Nova Scotians want is a premier that doesn't spend their money on TV ads taking credit for it. What they want is a real plan to turn the economy around, which starts with our suggestions of lowering their taxes and freezing their power rates and creating real jobs. Perhaps then 18,000 of them wouldn't have moved away last year. According to Statistics Canada, the Premier thinks that Statistics Canada is a rhetorical institution, I guess, but they count these things, Mr. Speaker, and 18,000 moved away, 3,000 net, a whole town gone because they're paying the highest tax in the country, the highest power rates in the country, and no plan to change that, Mr. Speaker. That's the problem. So I'll ask the Premier again, why does he think 18,000 people moved to another part of Canada if it isn't his own policies of high taxes and high power rates?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, just because people at home are watching and they might believe what the leader of the Conservative Party says, the actual population of Nova Scotia went up last year. It increased marginally. It's not to the point where we would like to see it. Obviously, we are pursuing a multifaceted approach to this. We are doing it through lowering taxes like the small business tax, like the large corporation capital tax. By the way, corporate taxes in our province are lower than they have been in decades. Mr. Speaker, we have a plan for the reduction of the HST now that we have fixed the enormous deficit left behind by the Conservative government. You know, we have, over the last 3 years, we have made tremendous progress in economic development. There is projects, 440 jobs, 500 jobs for IBM. There is the shipyard contract. There is saving of the jobs in Port Hawkesbury, and I know that the member for Yarmouth doesn't think that that adds to the GDP, but it does, Mr. Speaker. So, you know, we have a track record, a proven track record of economic development in this province that we are very proud of, and we are working hard to make sure that people have opportunity here.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, you know we all try and be factual around here. And because there are people watching at home, I will table for the benefit of the Premier the message of the Minister for the financial statements of the province from the year 2009, the year that the Premier was elected, signed by his own previous minister, who had come into office by the time these statements were done, which reports very clearly that the public accounts for the year ended March 31st, 2009, reported a surplus of $19,700,000, not a deficit, as the Premier continues to allege. Of course, he can't table anything to actually show that because it's not real, Mr. Speaker. He can call it something else, but those are the words of his own previous minister. Mr. Speaker, imagine what the population of Nova Scotia would be today if those 18,000 Nova Scotians hadn't voted with their feet and chosen to move to another part of Canada because of the taxes and the power rates that he is subjecting them to. And if that wasn't enough, they've added another $1,700,000,000 to our provincial debt in 4 short years. Every child born in Nova Scotia today starts off $14,000 in debt, Mr. Speaker. Perhaps that's why their parents are moving away, to free them from that burden. So I will ask the Premier if he will acknowledge the voting has already started. 18,000 people are already passing judgment on his record. Why did so many Nova Scotians move to another part of Canada last year?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, just as long as nobody believes a single word of what was just said, I know. Mr. Speaker, first of all, the Conservatives continue to claim that they had balanced budget after balanced budget. You know, in every one of the last 3 years, they overspent their budgets by literally hundreds of millions of dollars. That is not balancing the budget. They predicated their budgets on royalty revenues, which for them, Mr. Speaker, was $450 million. For us, it was $20 million. So just think of that, $430 million less because of services and because of programs that they put in place that we then had to support, Mr. Speaker. That is creating a structural deficit of the worst kind. Mr. Speaker, well, we fixed that mess. We continued to respect the collective agreements. We didn't do what the other governments did, which was to freeze them and to roll them back and to take nurses out of the system, Mr. Speaker. What we did was we had a reasonable approach. We fixed the mess that we found. We are growing our economy, adding not hundreds but thousands of new jobs in the province, Mr. Speaker. And that is the economic record of this government.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Justice has repeatedly stated that he is confident that there is sufficient funding available for addressing the issue of internet harassment and online crime. 2 years ago, the legislature was visited by the cyber program. This is a program which was started by the Truro Police and has recently moved under direction of the Cyber Internet Safety Society, an independent organization based in Truro. This is an important program which visits schools with an early intervention presentation, teaching bullying prevention and online safety in an engaging way that connects with children. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Justice tell Nova Scotians if his department has provided financial support for this important program in this fiscal year?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Yes, thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
I think the funding is worthy of that answer because, Mr. Speaker, I can confirm as well that the Department of Justice provided Cyber Internet Safety Society with $1,000 in the past year. Mr. Speaker, the recommendations contained in the report of the Nova Scotia Task Force on Bullying and Cyberbullying speaks directly to the tools which are being delivered to young people by the Cyber Internet Safety Society. In fact, they're currently delivering this to students across the province. By the end of June, we'll have visited 40-plus schools, reaching 25,000 students, with more and more schools wanting them to visit and to give their presentation. This is a proven success which should be built upon, and yet they have received a one-time grant of $1,000 from this minister to help run their entire operation. So, Mr. Speaker, what contact has the Minister of Justice had with this organization, and why is he only willing to spend $1,000 in the form of a one-time grant to the successful organization with a proven record of engagement with Nova Scotia students?
Honourable the Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to just maybe talk on a few different things. The voice in the background saying answer the question. I do plan to do that, but I plan to give some context. To answer it in the terms that the member is phrasing it is, of course, in the regular, or the opposition likes to put things in the negative. This government has a coordinator for cyberbullying. Today, we made a number of announcements. There's recommendations going forward. The Justice Department has put consistent dollars throughout the province to various community groups to deal the issue of bullying and cybercrime and other initiatives. We're looking at a wide approach and range to address many different issues in Nova Scotia. That organization that he refers to is doing good work. I don't question that. We have a coordinator. We have a number of others. I've supported them in different ways over the years. But to come into this House and start to put things in the negative context to destroy the good work that many volunteers across the province is doing, it's just typical of the opposition to say we'll whine and cry and complain, but acknowledge and recognize the hard work that many Nova Scotians are letting us know and saying thank you as a government for what we're doing. And we are committed, and I am committed as this morning in making that passionate cry and going to Ottawa yesterday to address this issue. The opposition's perspective on the issue of cybercrime is throw more money at it, try and make people think they're doing something, but they have no invested interest in it. We are committed to that. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, when we hear the Minister of Justice attacking the opposition for raising issues like this, it reminds me of an answer he gave just 2 weeks ago, which I believe made him a national embarrassment on the attack that he made on the opposition. Mr. Speaker, the fact is that organizations such as this cannot live on charity. They obviously require funding if they're going to be able to carry out the work that they do. This is a program that received accolades from this legislature when it visited, and we now know that it's received significant requests to provide this presentation throughout the entire province. Receiving a one-time grant of $1,000 clearly calls into question just how much support is this government giving for this program, especially knowing that this is the minister that has allowed millions to be cut out of the Department of Justice at a time when we see these issues and these cost pressures coming throughout the province. So I will ask the minister again, how can he justify a one-time grant of $1,000 for such a worthy program to combat cyberbullying in our province?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not going to elaborate on the fact that he doesn't have his facts correct, which is a consistent position that he takes on issues, but I will turn it over to my colleague, the Minister of Status Women, to add some parts to elaborate on some of the great work that we're doing as a collectiveness. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Advisory Council on the Status of Women.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It certainly has become obvious that the way we've approached funding community organizations and funding work perhaps hasn't been satisfactory. Certainly in discussions over a number of years, months, and particularly the last couple of weeks, organizations are saying that because of the recent incident, there has been an increase in their workload on the demands on their services. So their needs are under active consideration. At the same time, we recognize the valuable work that each of these organizations do in terms of trying to make life better for Nova Scotians. We're also aware that we need a more comprehensive, coordinated approach to action on these issues. We need to be able to serve all Nova Scotians, not in particular towns or communities or regions. So trying to encourage the community groups and provincial organizations to work more collaboratively together so we can better serve all Nova Scotians is our goal. And over the next number of weeks and months, there will be announcements that showing how we're supporting community action. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, a settlement has been reached between the Nova Scotia Home for Coloured Children and former residents. But, Mr. Speaker, the government has yet to settle. They've yet to establish a proper public inquiry. They've mused about a panel that falls far short of what those former residents deserve. They asked for a public inquiry. Others have had a public inquiry. They deserve a public inquiry. So my question through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister of Community Services, when will the NDP stop dragging their feet and commit to a public inquiry since such significant public policy issues are involved?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as we always comment on this side of the House, we work together as a team and we've done a lot of work and have met. So I'm going to pass this along to the Premier as the lead of our team on this issue.
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In fact, we've involved all of the departments in the consideration of the matters associated with the Nova Scotia Home for Coloured Children. I have, in fact, been assured by the group, the Voices group, that what they want at this point out of the government is not about money. They say that over and over again. It is not about money. It's about having a proper exploration of the issues associated with that institution. We agree with that entirely. Mr. Speaker, what we are doing is we are proceeding with a comprehensive review. I hope to be in a position shortly to be able to announce further information on that with respect to the terms of reference for the review. Mr. Speaker, I should point out that the announcement of the review was in response to information that we received from many different groups within the community, which included the Voices groups, and the decision for the review was in large part based on the recommendations that actually came from the Voices group.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, a public inquiry holds more power than a panel with no terms of reference. Inquiries have the power to subpoena witnesses, collect records, and give the former residents the opportunity to share their stories. In the past situations, we have granted public inquiries, and this situation should be treated no differently. So I'll go through the Premier with this question, Mr. Speaker. Can the Premier tell those who have come forward with evidence of horrific abuse what makes this situation any different than any other alleged abuse at Nova Scotia's institutions?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, how we deal with these matters is, you know, very much a function of the terms of reference of any kind of a commission, whether it's a review panel or a formal commission of some kind. It is the terms of reference which actually dictate the manner in which the matter will be investigated. And that's why we think it's very important that we get a trusted person or people to ensure that the terms of reference are adequate, to ensure an explanation or a examination, rather, of all the issues. There's a simple fact of the matter is this. You know, we are the only government that actually met with the Voices group. We are the only government that actually met with the alleged victims. We are the only government that has proceeded to listen to the complainants with respect to these issues, and we are the ones who are acting on it.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his final supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, The bottom line is that the former residents of the Home of Colored Children deserve no less than any other victims of alleged abuse at Nova Scotia's institutions. So my final question to the Premier, rather than complicate and drag out the process even more, will the Premier commit to a full public inquiry for the former residents of the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children?
Honourable the Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I suppose if a little over 4 years ago the member opposite had made those same representations to his own government, we probably wouldn't be here today.
Yeah.
Right? We probably wouldn't be here today. He had made those same representations. So, Mr. Speaker, we are taking the time to make sure that this is done right. We are doing an appropriate review. And the Conservative opposition wants to cast stones at us rather than accepting the fact that they were government for 10 years and did nothing.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the cyber program has been mentioned here today already, and those MLAs who took advantage of the opportunity would have seen the presentation when the cyber program came to this House and put on an information session. And, Mr. Speaker, that program is based in Truro, has been recognized as a model program for early intervention with regard to Internet safety. And they're actively engaging students and teaching them safe and respectful use of technology. And we know, Mr. Speaker, it's important that we have the tools in place to respond to harassment in the online world, but it's just as important that we address the root causes of the issue. So my question to the Minister of Education, would the Minister of Education tell Nova Scotians if her department has provided financial support for this program and how much?
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I know that the representatives from the Cyber Cops were working with our anti-bullying coordinator, Kathleen Richard. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the recommendations out of the McKay Report do speak to the need for a program which teaches our young people how to deal with technology and how they can help create a safe and respectful environment. We already have a program that does this, and by the end of June of this year, Mr. Speaker, they will have visited over 40 schools in our province and exposed this program to 25,000 students. Yet the Minister of Education and the cyberbullying coordinator, of which the Minister has just spoken, were approached for support, and they were told, quote, there are no resources available to support your efforts. So my question to the Minister, given that this program is already operational and more schools across the province are requesting the cyber program to visit their schools, why are they being told to look elsewhere for their support?
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I want to say that the work that's being done by the Cyber Cops is very good, and I know that it engages our students, and the work that they're doing needs to be commended. We are making sure that all of our responses are coordinated through our anti-bullying coordinator, Kathleen Richard, and as the minister of that represents the status of women has already made reference to, that we're going through each of these community groups. Very carefully to make sure that we have a comprehensive and cooperative approach. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Acknowledging that this group did meet with the coordinator and that the coordinator did say no, there were no resources, my question to the Minister is this. Will the Minister commit to meeting with the Cyber Internet Safety Society, which is now responsible for that program, to determine how the province can best support their efforts, because kids in our schools need this program?
Honourable the Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I think that most members of this House of Assembly recognize that our member from Truro, Bible Hill, works with the Cyber Cops and with their program. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. The existence of Langhouse, a Halifax non-profit drop-in centre for youth with mental illness, is being threatened by the NDP's crippling FCA labour legislation. The Executive Director, Maureen Fraser-McLaughlin, is very concerned about the bottom line and the possible impact FCA legislation will have on an organisation that also relies on volunteers, and so are we. Not only is this legislation making Nova Scotia's economic environment unfriendly for businesses, it's also seriously affecting the non-profit sector. So my question through you to the Minister, was this the intention of the FCA, or did the Minister not think about the chilling impact on all non-profit organisations one bit?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, what I will say to the member and through you that the collective bargaining process is moving along as it should. I know both parties are meeting and it's moving towards a resolution. I would hope that that's the purpose of any labour legislation that would be passed by this government or hopefully any ones that were passed by former governments, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on his first supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, we can see firsthand that FCA is affecting small business and volunteer organizations like Langhouse negatively, as we believed it would all along. We stood on principle that this is a bad idea. The Liberals, interestingly, said they were against but were prepared to compromise with the NDP. There's a time to compromise, Mr. Speaker, but this was not it. So my question through you to the Minister, in a time where we have some of the slowest economic growth in the country and pay the highest taxes, the people of Nova Scotia deserve to know which one of the NDP's special interest groups is happy with the results of this legislation.
There we go. Which one?
Honourable the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
You know, Mr. Speaker, The member opposite, wants to keep churning up his anti-labor rhetoric, anti-worker rhetoric, Mr. Speaker. But it's, you know, what we're trying to impart to that member, Mr. Speaker, is that the both sides are at the table. They're taking serious their responsibilities to get in a collective agreement. And indeed, if the member really knew how collective bargaining work, he'd realize that this legislation actually comes and helps agreements happen, not keep them apart, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Victoria de Lakes on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let's keep in mind that this is a non-profit organization.
That's right.
Mr. Speaker, Langhouse is another example of how the NDP do not know how to manage a modern economy. The NDP are happy to see their legislation cripple the economic and non-profit sectors, but we aren't. So, my question to the Minister, will the Minister take responsibility for his government's actions on the FCA, which is killing even more jobs here?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Mr. Speaker, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what I will take responsibility for, Mr. Speaker, is the respect of an employer and employee to engage in meaningful collective bargaining, Mr. Speaker, not like the third party, Mr. Speaker. I was accused yesterday by the third party about forgetting where I come from, Mr. Speaker. I come from the Waterford, Mr. Speaker. I come from where a miner was killed, Mr. Speaker. I know my labour history, Mr. Speaker. I've done collective bargaining, Mr. Speaker. I've respected people on the one side of the table. They respected me back. That's something that group doesn't understand.
The Honourable Member for Preston.
Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. The Honourable Member for Preston has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, in 2011, the NDP passed changes to the Land Registration Act, which were supposed to clarify land titles in the province. However, it has come to our attention that there are still gaps being experienced by Nova Scotians. When faced with a dispute over property lines, Nova Scotians are finding that their only recourse is through expensive court battles that can take years and cost thousands of dollars. And in the end, a satisfactory outcome may or may not happen for both parties. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Service Nova Scotia, Municipal Relations, admit there's a serious issues with the present system?
The Honourable Minister of Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I have to say that I would find it hard to believe that anything instituted by any government may not have some issues. But I am hearing very little that's coming to my office as far as the issues that the honourable member raises, Mr. Speaker.
The honourable member for Preston on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I asked this question to the minister recently, and his answers were that there's no avenues on a provincial level until 10 years after the problem has existed. The minister indicates that outside an expensive and prolonged court battle, Nova Scotians could only bring challenges forward to either Bar Association or to the Association of Land Surveyors. For Nova Scotians faced with this situation, there is a gap, and it's clear that the government has fallen short when ensuring that a system is in place that will actually give landowners clear title to their property. Mr. Speaker, will the minister consider a binding arbitration process to fill the current gap in legislation and regulation which fall under the Land Registration Act?
The Honourable Minister of Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am a little curious that the question is being asked for a second time. The land registration system, or migration, I guess, as the member is referring to, the province does take responsibility after 10 years. So up until that time, it is at the responsibility of the landowners. A big part of this, obviously, is the way the descriptions on deeds are interpreted, and I guess it's all in knowing where to draw the line, Mr. Speaker. So I would say that this government has no plan at the present time to make any changes, and actually the number that's what the courts are for, conflicts, civil conflicts between individuals, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, according to information that the Minister of Health gave to me during budget estimate, and this is information I do believe the minister was correct. For the second year in a row, Nova Scotia had 50 or more people identified as contracting Lyme disease. While members of the legislature may be aware that Lyme disease is contracted by a black-legged tick, members of the public may not be so aware. So, Mr. Speaker, last year's public information campaign appears to have consisted of one newspaper ad and some pamphlets left at Access Nova Scotia sites and the odd press release. Now that we know that the spike in 2011 of 54 cases wasn't a fluke, repeated again last year, 50 cases there, what specific plans does the Minister of Health have for a public awareness campaign this year?
Of health and wellness.
I know. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'm a bit perplexed because they yell when we do advertise about things, and they yell when we don't advertise about things. But I can reassure all Nova Scotians and the member opposite that we take that Lyme disease and the tick population in Nova Scotia very seriously. I could talk very loud, Mr. Speaker, if I have to. We take it very seriously. We take it very seriously, honestly. Yeah, that's why our government website has increased, or make sure that we have really good data on the areas around the province that we think there's a higher incident of black-legged ticks in those areas, Mr. Speaker. We're going to commit to another campaign this year. I mentioned in estimates that I meet regularly with doctors in Nova Scotia who have news releases out to all their members, Mr. Speaker, so physicians are aware to make sure that if they look for signs or symptoms of people who are ill. So we're going to continue to do that. We talk regularly with the district health authorities, with the physicians. So we will do another campaign this year, and we'll ensure that as many people know about the likelihood of contracting Lyme disease around with the black-legged tick population here in the province.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I think the Minister will remember occasions where I've actually stood in this House and said, I will not object to advertisements that go out that actually convey information to the electorate, to the public. We don't mind that. What we object to, Mr. Speaker, are the blatant political partisan advertisements that are just feel good, please vote for us kinds of advertisements that this government puts out day after day after day after day. Mr. Speaker, I have yet to see a commercial air for a sexual assault strategy, or what to do if you're raped, or what consent means, or how to identify a black-legged tick, or what you should do when you go out into the woods and go for a walk. There's no information out there on a commercial, not one. And yet we hear it's, we're going to yell if you... Well, yeah, I'm going to yell, because you're spending all kinds of millions of dollars on partisan advertisements. Mr. Speaker, if diagnosis and treatment are not immediate, patients are left dealing with a long list of debilitating symptoms, including arthritis and neurological symptoms. Now, 50 diagnoses may not seem like a lot to the crowd across the way, but that disease severely impacts lives. And veterinarians are well informed about this disease. What is the minister going to do to ensure Order. Doctors know more?
Well, I must say that we, you know, got to about 11 questions today because of the length of the questions on answers and questions. So it's not a very good average of 11 questions on all sides of the House. So if we could kind of shorten those answers and questions maybe down to a minute each, it sure would get along and get a lot more questions. Thank you. The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on an introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to draw the attention of the members to the West Gallery and to a very special visitor who is visiting us today from North Sydney. She's here with an important job, and that is to keep an eye on her dad, but I will add, not only her dad, but on all members of the legislature in the last hour. And that is the daughter of the member for Cape Breton North.